Welcome back to the Hatchcast. This is Aaron Richard.
This is Danielle Tice.
This is Diego Fernandez.
And Gabe Burke.
How are you all doing? Here we are. We're at the season finale. We've lived good, long lives, and we made it through the semester. Congratulations, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Didn't think I was going to make it.
You didn't think you were going to make it?
No, but I surprisingly did so much better than I thought I was going to do, which is a good thing. I was overreacting at how bad I thought everything was going to turn out at the end of the semester there.
Oh, no. Is that just because you were hyped up on anxiety or what?
Probably. Yeah. But it turned out great. And now I'm at home. So a nice little adjustment.
Stop huffing adrenaline. That's never good. Gabe, how about you? How are you feeling?
Pretty good. I had a great spring semester. Taking some more classes this summer, which I finally just started today. It's nice that the sun's been out recently. It's supposed to be hot the next couple of days. So it'll be nice to be able to walk around the campus a little bit and really experience summer in East Lansing yet again.
Fantastic. Danielle is our official graduate of the program. Official graduate. She is a Spartan alumna. How are you feeling?
But no degree yet. I still have a couple summer classes.
They just say that's ABD, all but degree.
Right. Yeah, it'll be great though. I'll finish off strong. So stronger than spring semester because it was a struggle bus.
It's all right. Do you have any plans ahead of you?
No, right now I'm looking at a job for university advancement. Fingers crossed that might work out. But other than that, I'm just kind of hanging around Lansing, building up Fellow, my co-founding company. But yeah, that's what I got going on.
Yeah, you're in Momentum this summer. For those of you who do not know, Momentum is a pre-accelerator program that it basically invests $5,000 for each team that is accepted into it. And it gives them 6 weeks of rigorous, focused time on their startups. So it is a wonderful program. And Danielle, you and John have launched your business, Fellow. And how is Momentum? You're in week two now. So how are you doing?
Yeah, week two. It's been a long week, I feel like. But last week we started and we met with John Rode and he talked about like setting goals. And that was a really nice workshop to sit through for our initial meeting. And then the rest of that week we headed up to Traverse City and spent some time with the Traverse City startup week that was happening. We got to network with a whole lot of people. We pitched to the Northwest Michigan Angel Investors, which was really cool. And we just got to bond with each other. So it was a really nice way to start the program. As far as this week, we've touched on lost stuff like today. And then we started to learn how to code in this V1 platform that an alumni actually built. So they're keeping us busy, but it's been fun.
That is awesome. I'm so excited. So we are sitting here. This is our season finale, dear audience, dear listeners. This is our last episode of season 6. And I'm just like, it's so bittersweet because we've all worked so hard on this season. And we just are so thankful that all of you have stuck around with us and that you're here for the sign off. So everybody chime in. What was your favorite episode? And what did this season teach you about yourselves and about entrepreneurship?
All right. Well, I may be a bit biased, but the couple episodes I was able to put together with Jim and the one episode I did put together with Amy Brasser, those really hit home for me in the times that I was creating and producing them. And I learned a lot through the process of doing that too. So they are some of my favorite episodes to listen to as well.
I think that's
fair. Yeah. Yeah, those were great episodes. I'd say for me, it was also kind of the same. It was just a great experience to like be able to executive produce an episode. And so my first one, traveling up to Traverse City with Aaron and Gabe, and visiting the Mobby Vineyards and interviewing Larry Mobby. That was just an incredible experience. And it was also a learning experience because we had forgotten the power cord. It was on the fly, problem solving. So that was great. And I'd say my favorite episode that wasn't my own, I really liked the Comma concert one with Isaiah Johns that Karina did. I don't know why, I resonated with it a lot. And I thought Isaiah's just perspectives on everything and on creation was just really cool. And like his creative process. And I just think what he like started is just a really cool thing. And also this most recent episode that is going to happen right now for our listeners with Amy Wiesner. That was just a great conversation. It just flowed so nicely. And I think the topics we hit on are just really important.
Fantastic. Gabe, what about you?
Yeah, it's hard not to choose your own. I mean, I really like doing mine. I thought it was fun bringing in a different kind of topic, something a little bit out there. With doing cannabis with Eric Slutsky and doing the video too, which we're going to release at some point, which I'm still working on, which was a fantastic experience. Able to do the video walkthrough tour of the facility was really fun. But I talked about it a lot, at least with you, Aaron. I was always telling you the Innovate Stay with Rob Smith, I really, really liked. I thought just everything he said seemed to inspire me in one way or another. And I just thought the life that he's lived thus far and what he's currently doing is just truly fantastic.
I think that my favorite episodes were all the episodes that you all did. Like, seriously, I think that asking me to choose my favorite is like asking me who my favorite child is. So I will not offer that up, but I will say that, the experiences of going on some tours with Diego and Gabe Hales up to Traverse City was exquisite. Getting to go down to Doghouse was amazing with Gabe, and getting to hang out with Danielle and Amy and Danielle and Jim. Those were extraordinary experiences, and it taught me so much. Like, getting to see you all sort of stretch your muscles and flex and get to show the audience what you can do, like, all of that was magical. It was truly, truly magical. So this season, it feels like hands down is the best season of Hatchcast we've done.
I agree. I've listened to quite a few of the Hatchcast episodes, but felt like every executive produced episode that did come out, they all had something like large to take away. With like with Diego's, Larry, he was very introspective, I found, and I really enjoyed some of the points he brought. And then with Gabe's, like the 420 episode, there was a lot of like legalities and stuff that you talked about with Eric and everything else that he was talking about too. I learned a lot this season just listening to them.
I think everyone, the beauty of the executive produced episodes is kind of everyone brought their own like creative expression with it. Like all those episodes felt like a little art piece in itself. And also the work of Danielle with all of her little heads that she made and the graphics, I think, paired so nicely with each episode being its own like little look into the minds of the people creating it.
We haven't mentioned, but Charlotte's Color of Innovation series, she did 3-4 parts. Those worked really well together, and they talked about a lot of good things in there too. So
just a huge shout out to everybody on this team, including Will, who is abroad at this moment, and to Karina, who is already starting her internship, non-Burgess Institute internship. Just shout out to everyone on this team and for knocking it out of the ballpark this year. It was fantastic to watch that happen.
Huge shout out to Will. He hasn't really been on many episodes. I don't think he created an executive produce, but he was so big in like the back end production of things. So thank you, Will. Round of applause.
Yes.
Thank Yay. You. Will, we couldn't have done it without you, sincerely. And I hope that you, Will is also graduated. He is right now completing his study abroad to officially earn his degree. And so we wish him all the best of luck. Well, he is away enjoying Spain. He's in Spain.
Yes. Yes, of course.
I won't disclose his location just in case there are some people out there who might take advantage of that. So let's not do that. I'm not doxing Will. Well, everyone, this is the bittersweet moment where we say goodbye to season 6. And we let all of you know, our beloved listeners, that we are going on a bit of a hiatus. So this year has been a lot of work. And as Diego and Charlotte and Karina all go off to their respective summer internships, and as Danielle and Will find their new paths, we say goodbye and we say hello and we say not for long. But Gabe, you and I are going to be working hard this summer at mapping out content and what we want to see in the next year and the next season. So that'll be fun. You and I get to hang out a lot.
Yeah, I'm excited. We'll set up some great things for the school year.
I have no doubt about that. But we are taking a break, dear listeners. And we just want to let you know, A, we appreciate you. B, please go back through and listen to our seasons. Some of the old seasons will be dropping off from the feed. So get them in while you can. And just stay on the lookout. We will be coming back maybe in this current form, maybe in a different form. But we are going to be taking a little bit of time away, and we'll probably come back later in 2022 to launch either season 7 of Hatchcast or to launch something completely different, because in the startup world, we know when to pivot. So that's what we're going to do. But before we say goodbye to season 6, guess what? We have one more episode for you. And Diego, do you want to set us up for this next episode, this last episode of Hatchcast?
Yes, I would be happy to set us up for this last season finale. And I'm honored that this episode could be the finale episode. And I think that this episode speaks a lot for itself. It's got a lot of nuggets of wisdom. I think it's a good crash course for anyone who's looking for personal growth, especially in the age range of college students, which is what Professor Amy Wisner specializes in. So this episode is kind of all about growth mindset. And the way I got connected with her is she was my teacher for my Marketing 250 class, which was a very interesting experience because this year she decided to not have grades for the class. So that being said, I'd like to have Amy Wisner introduce herself and enjoy this episode.
Hey, before we close this off, just really quick, as is a tradition in our team, before we close off a meeting, we go around the room and tell each other one thing that we are grateful for. So as a kind of sign off, we're going to go around and each of us are going to tell you what we are grateful for right now. Diego, go.
I would have to say I am grateful for my mom because I'm now living at home again and she is cooking me up a chicken fajita dinner downstairs. So the luxuries of living at home with your mom who cooks is fantastic.
Yum.
Amen.
Amen.
Amen. Gabe, what about you?
I'm grateful that my COVID quarantine is over. and I have more than just four walls to look at every day. That's nice. We can really expanding territory there. Also, you know what? I'll give a shout out to my mom too, because her birthday is coming up, and it was just Mother's Day a couple weeks ago too. So shout out to Mrs. Burke. Thanks for being you.
Aw, Danielle.
Yeah, I am extremely grateful to have been a part of this team. It's been amazing. Like, anyone who looks for internships, I'm like, you need to check out Burgess. They do amazing things. Everyone you work with too, they are just amazing people. And I cannot say enough about the Burgess Institute. I am just extremely grateful for everyone I have met along my way at MSU.
Everybody's so in the great visual medium that is the podcast. We're all giving Taylor Swift hearts to Danielle and to each other. And I apologize. The dogs are going nuts behind me because they too were very moved by your gratitude moment. So thank you for sharing. And I am going to round this off by saying that I am grateful. I'm of course grateful for my mom, but I am really grateful for all of you, my team, for being such stellar human beings. And I am grateful to our listeners. And thank you for pushing us to be the best student-run podcast ever. And thank you for sticking around and letting us know what you love and what you don't love about the Hatchcast. So thank you everybody, and thank you team for being so stellar. And without further ado, here is Diego's interview with Amy Wisecamp.
My name is Amy Wisner, and I'm a professor at the Eli Broad College of Business here at Michigan State. And I teach the Marketing 250 class, which is called Business Communication, but as you know, it is very much about understanding who you are and really what value you bring and what you value and the kind of impact you want to have on the world. So some people call it therapy class. Other people, it's self-discovery, personal growth. And and then I'm Olivia and Caleb's mom on the side. Oh, that's really my primary job. The areas that I research are in the field of interpersonal communication. I look specifically at the types of people who can create positive social change. That's one of the areas. Another area, because of the Wisdom Project that I do with alumni at Broad, in this class in particular, I have been researching advice giving and flash mentorship or mentorship that exists over just a short period of time, 30 to 45 minutes, maybe a couple of interactions, but not the longer term mentorship that people typically think of. And then most recently, what I've started looking into is intrinsic versus extrinsic motivation and what motivates us when we remove those extrinsic factors. And I'm excited to continue exploring that.
Yeah. And of course, that's the way I connected with you, is through the Marketing 250 class. And that's a new thing. It's new that it's all about self-discovery and personal growth. So can you kind of talk about like why you made that shift and kind of what prompted you to start looking into these different topics?
Yes, absolutely. A few things happened. First, becoming a mom changed everything for me. So Olivia's 4 and Caleb's 2. Once Olivia started learning to talk and exploring the world around her and seeing how she's just, I mean, truly, kids are just innately learners. I mean, you can think back to when you were a kid and just everything's interesting. You're curious about everything. I mean, they learn an entire language without really any kind of formal training. They're just watching the world around them and practicing and trying things out. And discovery is just part of their lives. And so observing that and seeing that really the best learning that was happening for her, and then of course with Caleb, is what they're most excited about, whatever they want to learn. And I thought, you know, I think that's the same for us, right? But then we take little kids and we put them in militant little rows and tell them, here's the package of information that you need to know. Now hand it back to me. Okay, excellent. Here's your grade. And then we do that for 12 years. And by the time students get to me, freshman, sophomore, sometimes junior, but usually this class is predominantly freshman and sophomore level students, the desire for learning is really kind of non-existent. And I don't think that's to the fault of the students. In fact, I think the students are doing exactly what they've been taught to do for the last 12 years of formal education. And unfortunately, what that means is then we end up with no critical thinking, no desire to learn, no just inherent intrinsic desire to learn the thing. It's more about this sort of exchange of time for grade, right? Sort of a capitalist, you know, model, I guess, of education. And it's much less about the learning and much more about the grade getting. And I kept seeing that where it was, you know, for myself, right, the smallest amount of effort that you can put in for the maximum grade that you can get. Like that's what we do. And it was through my graduate studies that I really figured out that grades didn't matter at all. And it was really more about the actual learning. And it was a huge identity shift for me, which is something that I've seen with the students this semester is, you know, when you take away that reward system, which is this, you know, idea of intrinsic versus extrinsic motivation, if you take away that reward / punishment system of grades and say, now just go learn, after people have been in a system where all they know is, tell me how I'm doing, evaluate me, tell me what I've done, did I do the right things? There's no right answer to who are you?
Yeah.
And I don't know. I surely don't know the answer to that. I can sort of come close to my own answer. But who are you, Diego? I don't know. And if you're growing, I have no idea. The only person who can tell me that is you.
Yeah.
And so really helping students on that journey of discovery, I knew if this was something that I wanted to help them do, that taking grades out of the mix was going to have to happen, which I know was a bold move, and I'm glad I did it. It was a fantastic experience, and lots and lots of research questions have arisen for me as a result. But as far as the content itself and why self-discovery, why personal growth is so important to me is that, you know, really at the core of everything we do, the most important thing is who we are and what do we care about? What do we value? And really aligning with that. And that's a journey I've been on for the last probably 8 or so years of my life. Before that, I was definitely a rule following grade getter, you know, following the rules and doing things the way I'm supposed to. And really the more that I've focused on this idea of understanding who I am and what I really care about and what really truly matters to me, the more I've been able to align really every decision that I've made with that. And so when I look at what students are up against, you know, during these early formative years of college, you know, you're deciding what you're going to do for the rest of your life. I remember
it's a lot
it.
Of pressure.
Yeah, for sure. And I have, you know, people come in and they'll say, I just don't know what to do. I don't know what to major in. What would you suggest? I'm like, I don't know. Tell me about yourself. What do you care about? Who are you? And people can't answer the question. And honestly, it's not just students. Lots of grownups also can't. So it's really something that, you know, and you and I have had this conversation that it's something that really needs to start a lot earlier, that we're, instead of, you know, asking even little kids, what do you want to be when you grow up? Who are you? I think one of the really fantastic quotes from one of the students in our class this semester was, I've heard my whole life that I should just be myself, and yet no one has ever asked me who I am until this class.
Who gave that quote? I can't remember.
I don't remember which student it
was.
Wish
we could shout them out.
I know. I don't remember who said it, but it was phenomenal. And I do hope that they'll hear this and tell us so that I can remember forever.
Exactly.
Yeah. I don't remember who said it specifically.
I know for a lot of students, this is kind of like the first time that they've been asked. And even me, I think I've always kind of been thinking about things, but I don't really think I've been like in an environment where I was really asked and like had to write about it and had to do exercises that kind of helped me discover it. So it has been, even like, I would say I'm generally someone who thankfully was raised in an environment that kind of let me explore who I was.
Yes,
and
yes,
I wasn't yes. super like constrained mm-hmm, as a kid, mm-hmm. which I'm very grateful for. But even then, like, I still had trouble figuring out and like had trouble even like coming to terms with, like, I think a common thing is I'd write something down. I'd be like, wait, does that actually sound like me?
Right.
And then one day I'd feel some way, and then another day I'd feel a different way. So I think that those are natural things that start to happen when you start to think about these things.
When you really are mindful.
Yeah. And I think it's also easy for students to kind of just avoid it.
For people to avoid
it. For people.
It.
Yeah, for everyone.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Because it's tough.
It's tough.
You come up against a lot of sort of existential questions that are difficult.
Yeah. And I think even sometimes when I'll do like the work and I'll be journaling, sometimes I'll be like, oh my God, I just don't want to think about this anymore. I'll just be like, I just want to go do something else.
Yeah,
exactly.
It's hard. Mm-hmm. Well, and that's something that, you know, I've said several times throughout the semester is growth happens outside of your comfort zone.
Definitely.
When you are outside of your comfort zone, it's not easy. It's actually... it can be really painful. It's definitely uncomfortable. It's uncertain. And we know as a human, you're going to do everything you can to avoid pain, discomfort, uncertainty, all of the things that happen outside of your comfort zone. And yet that's where growth happens. So you do have to really mindfully push yourself to that point. And so when people would say, this class is so easy, you are not doing this right.
You're not putting in the work.
Yeah, you're not doing. That's not growth. Sure, it's easy to write some stuff down, but is it really self-discovery? Probably not.
Going back to kind of the extrinsic versus intrinsic motivators, why do you think, like, why is it so important? Like, if you could just go a little bit more in depth into that, why is it so important that we have intrinsic motivators? Because I know that's a big thing in your class.
You know, it's interesting because it really wasn't intended to be. It became obvious to me that this was something that we are not helping people identify. When I took grades away, I said, we're going to have this class. There are going to be no grades. We are not evaluating you. You will be self-assessing. You will be telling us how it's going. And again, I knew it was a bold move, but I knew it had to happen if we were going to take this approach. And I thought most students were going to think, woohoo, yay, a class that we've got that we don't have to worry about grades. And it was actually more like, the response was more like I had pushed them all into some personal hell they'd never experienced.
Yeah.
And so much uncertainty, and recognizing that at this point in your lives, that most students, the response was, how am I supposed to know if I'm doing it right? And I kept saying, there is no right. All right. Are you discovering who you are? Only you can tell me that. And so I can't evaluate you. I can't tell you if you're doing it right. Well, are you going to look at my journal? No, I wouldn't want to influence what you're putting in your journal, right? And so all of these factors of what we've been raised around, myself included, are all of these extrinsic or external factors. So we started this semester, if you remember, during the first class with a gratitude practice. I had everybody journal about what they are the most grateful for and what kinds of things came up for people.
A lot of times it was family, and it was like mom. Mom was
yes!
a huge one. Yeah.
You're welcome,
like close
moms.
Family. Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, family, friends, their dogs, their family pets, their even in some cases, some sort of safety, security, health, those sorts of things, right? And when I asked, so then what does society say is success? What does success look like? How do we define success? What came up?
I mean, for a lot of people, it's like money or like a good job, a stable job,
yes.
something like
yeah.
that.
Yeah, money, power, influence, status, nice car, nice house, all the things, material possessions that represent that you have money or status or power or any of those things, right?
Yeah.
Big difference between how we measure if we are successful versus what we deem as the most important, because clearly whatever you're the most grateful for is what you value the most in your life, I would argue.
Definitely.
And then when you boil that down to what does success look like in this class, right? Or in a class in college, grades, 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 right? And those are external factors. All of those things are the extrinsic motivators. And when your eye is on the prize and that's what you're focused on, it is nearly impossible to also stay focused on what you truly value and what is important to you. And so then how do you align with those things? How do you align with what you value? How do you align with what matters the most to you? How do you align with yourself and who you are as at the core of your being if what you're doing is constantly chasing some sort of extrinsic factor? And in some cases, it's how many likes you have on a post and how many followers you have on Instagram. And what, you know, so there are all these ways that people, it's all about what do people think? Whether it's what does a teacher think? What does society think? What do my Instagram followers think? Whatever. And we just lose focus on what do we think and how are we aligning? And honestly, for me, I mean, they always say teach what you need to learn. And I keep saying I'm teaching what I wish I would have learned when I was 19 or 20, because I didn't start questioning this stuff. I was chasing all of the external factors until I was nearing the corner toward my 40th birthday. And all of a sudden started having these series of aha moments that I was in each of these areas. Yes, by definition, successful, but not aligning with what really mattered to me. And as I've sort of realigned and focused more and more on self-discovery and really understanding what matters to me and aligning with that intrinsic set of factors, I've found really what I would say is my purpose in life and my calling. And that to me is really what it comes down to, is you can chase the dream. You can chase what other people say success looks like. You can hustle all you want. But if it's out of alignment with what you value and what matters to you, you're never going to be truly happy. You can be, by definition, successful and still be completely miserable. And so that's really why I did all of this, is because I really want you all to live great lives and be aligned with what matters to you and not have to wait till you're 40 to figure it out. And honestly, that's, if you look at this, you know, sort of compare and contrast this extrinsic versus intrinsic factors, you can align those. Absolutely. If what society says is successful does align with what matters to you, then you will be happy, right? It's all about alignment. But if it's not, then you won't be. And when you look at these, when you compare and contrast this sort of societal set of expectations and what we do to hustle to get there, whatever it is, likes, followers, money, material possessions, power, status, all of those, all of that, some sort of extrinsic factor, it's driven by fear and scarcity. It's driven by, if I don't do the things that people think matter, then what are they going to think about me? They're going to think I'm less than. They're going to reject me. I'm going to be, you know, an outcast. I'm going to be kicked out of the cool kids group, right?
Yeah.
When it's about alignment with what you value, it becomes about, it's not about this sort of narcissistic what's in it for me. That's not it. So when you think about what matters to you intrinsically and you're aligning with your value, your core values, your guiding principles, it's not about this rugged individualism and what matters to me and sort of this narcissistic look at all. It becomes about how you show up as your best self in your life, and that then influences everyone else around you in the absolute most positive way that you possibly can. And it essentially eliminates fear. If you can get out of your head about what everyone else thinks about all of these external factors, and stop even looking over there and start looking at what do I value and does this align with what I value, then fear, it's going to still creep in, but you can quickly quiet it. And I've learned this from lots of years of this process of self-discovery and personal growth and phenomenal therapists and coaches and, you know, amazing, beautiful friends who are very value aligned. And this is, you know, this is really what it comes down to. This class is such a perfect example of what I'm talking about. What the College of Business expected me to do is teach business communication, how to write memos, how to give presentations, how to write things, right? And we did that for several years. And what I saw was people aren't learning it. People are doing whatever, performing to the standard, whatever they need to do to turn in the thing to get the grade. And I just continued to come up against my own values and saying, what I really care about is authenticity. That is, authenticity and wisdom, sort of this inner knowing, are the two, and then growth. Those are really the things that I care about the most: authenticity, wisdom, and growth. And that's not what was happening. If I'm going to spend my life's work teaching undergraduate students and some graduate students, but mostly, you know, 600 undergrads every semester, it needs to be more value aligned. I want to help them grow. I want to help them be their most authentic selves. I want to help them understand at the core of who they are that there is this wisdom that lives at the core, at the center of each of us as individuals. We are born with this, and we just, we don't foster that. And
not
so,
at all. Yeah.
Yeah. When I made the decision to make this shift, it was totally value aligned. And I knew it was a huge risk. I mean, they could still call me and say I'm fired.
Yeah, it's always a possibility.
Right,
yeah.
That could happen. But at the same time, I'm okay with that. Not that, hey, in case anyone from Broad is listening, I don't want to be fired. But I'm okay with it because this is so aligned with where my, like, true sense of who I am lives, that I know this is the work that I am supposed to be doing. So if it's not at Broad, it's going to be somewhere. It's yeah. I'm going to be doing this work. And so making that shift was not from a place of what should I be doing and what am I afraid would happen if I, you know, but more of just, let's go. This is where I'm supposed to be. And this is what I can bring to people, what I know is the most valuable thing that I can do to help people grow and to align the most with what I value and the strengths that I bring. And that's what I hope to help students do through this process.
Yeah. And going back to like the fact that it's not fostered, mm-hmm. it's like, I think that so many people would be so much better off if they just spent, if they like didn't stop being curious, like,
yes.
like to your first point about yes. like your kids.
Yes.
And it's funny. So this Easter, when I went home, I saw home videos of myself for the first time ever. I was like 3 years old and it was like the trippiest experience ever.
Baby Diego.
I know. It was so crazy. But like since then, I almost felt like I like gained a little part of myself from like seeing that, because I was like, wow, like I was super curious. Like I was like running around the yard, like picking up sticks and just like waving them around. And it's just like, it's kind of, I think for a lot of people looking at that could even bring up like a sadness. Like they're like, oh my God, like
I've lost
so much.
Yeah.
And so like, what do you think in like a, maybe a bigger picture scenario, like what do you think, just what could people do to like, to not lose that in your perfect world.
Oh my gosh. Yes. I do have so many thoughts about this. How much time do we have? I think the answer is absolutely creating space for our children to grow up free from the constraints of this system that's been over the course of time. I mean, if you look at all of my friends who are educators, want nothing more than exactly what I'm talking about, to help foster authenticity and growth and learning and all of these really beautiful things, but we're constrained by systems and policies. And so in an ideal world, I would say we would see those systems and policies change in a way where we're really fostering this continued sense of creativity and question asking and less about conformity and performance to some external standard.
And I think that we are headed in that direction, because if you think about old school thinking,
yeah,
like you think about like conformity and this kind of like loyalty and all that kind of stuff. So the fact that we call that old school is I think a good change. But then you also have like social media, so it's like you're kind of improving, but you're also there's all these other things like social media that come in that increase this fear and like this comparison.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, and I think all of the aspects, I mean, in this class, and we talk about comparison, yes, it is the thief of joy, right? Comparison. Comparison is the thief of joy. And you can use it as inspiration, right? And so helping people see where when someone posts something about their success, not giving yourself the time or the space to internalize that shame message, right? Don't judge yourself, criticize yourself that you're not there yet. Use it as the fuel, the fire to say, wow, I'm so excited for them.
Yeah.
And I've got so many things to do. Let's go.
Yeah, it really is a lot about perspective.
Absolutely. That objective self-assessment piece, I think, is probably the most important thing that's everybody in this class has heard me say over and over and over again. Take a look back at what you've done over the last week, over the last month, over the last semester, and objectively self-assess. Don't shame and judge and criticize yourself for what you didn't do. Just note what you did and what you didn't do. Celebrate your wins and then decide, what do you need to do differently or better to be closer to where you want to be in anything you do, right? And that's just not what we learn. What we learn is end state thinking.
Yes.
Right? We always learn it's about the grade. It's about, you know, we hear all of these sensational stories about the person who lost 100 pounds or the straight A student or the valedictorian or the, you know, whatever it is, you know, even my friends posting about their kids and celebrating their kids' victories. It's always about a sports team that made it to the finals. It's a student who won the XYZ award at school for whatever.
Yeah.
And that's all end state thinking. And while I can appreciate celebrating those things because that is phenomenal, a lot of things went into that student getting there. And yet we don't see anyone, rarely do we see people celebrating eating a salad or taking the stairs or all of the times that you just show up for something. And that's the thing that really, what if I could encourage anybody to change any behavior, it would be that. Start celebrating your daily wins. Give yourself credit for the stuff that you do. Don't just spend time shaming, judging, criticizing yourself for not doing everything that you said you were going to do or for not being there, wherever there is yet.
That was probably one of the most like impactful things that I learned from you is like the end state thinking, because I didn't even realize like how affected I was by it until like I thought about it.
Yes.
And then I realized there's so many things that I think are so cool and like I want to try. And then my first thought is like, oh, well, if I get really good in this, like this will happen to me. And then I just start going down, and I even journal about that. And I was like, that's kind of preventing me from really figuring out what it is that I actually like want to do, because I'm not focused on enjoying the thing.
Yes.
I'm focused on what it's going to bring for me.
Yes. Yes.
It almost seems like there's so much wisdom in this class, and there's so much to implement, and it's all like personal how you're going to implement it.
Absolutely.
But I think for a lot of kids, it might even be a little overwhelming because Absolutely. They may see it. They're like, oh my God, this is so true. But it's like, now I have to implement all these things in my life. So I guess that kind of leads me into what would you think is a good implementation strategy for like these ideas? Because they are a little like revolutionary. Like there's not a lot of people on college campuses like teaching this and spreading these ideas. So what would be a good implementation strategy for a student who recognizes the value in it, mm-hmm. but doesn't really know
like what to do next?
Yeah.
Well, we've talked about this. I truly think the most important thing is identify whatever it is, what is your one big thing?
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
And we've talked about this. I'm going to start this specifically, one bold, inspired goal, right? And by inspired, I mean inspired by your own understanding of who you are and what you care about. What's the most important thing that you want to focus on first? And then identify, you know, there are all sorts of things in your life that have to also continue happening while you're focused on that. But then giving yourself permission to let go of everything else in service of that one big goal, that one bold, inspired goal, whatever that is. Maybe it's that you're going to brush your teeth more frequently, right? Whatever it is. I don't get that. Might be way too easy, right? But even so, whatever it is, maybe you're going to take the stairs more. Maybe you're going to start a podcast. You're going to write a book. You're going to deliver a TED Talk. I mean, I'm just giving you my whole list. Give you my whole list, right? Yeah. I do want to brush my teeth more often. No, I'm kidding. But, you know, there are so many things. I want to become a minimalist. When I imagine this perfectly beautiful minimalist living with two toddlers, two dogs, and a cat, first of all, that may be a little unrealistic. But also, is it the most important thing to me right now? It's not. This course was my one big for this semester. This was my everything, was to make sure that this was executed in a way that was organic. You know, we didn't set out to do anything, but really let it unfold organically, which from what I understand from students felt unorganized. Yes. Absolutely.
But I would also say from my perspective, yes, it did feel unorganized, but it also made it feel a lot more authentic.
Yes.
So,
right.
So it is, that is another case of like perspective, mm-hmm. because someone mm-hmm. who's used to.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And again, that was taking people outside of their comfort zone. Here's how classes are. This is not like that. Right. Because part of the process is not having deadlines. What do? In the absence of a deadline, if blow off the thing is your answer, that tells you something, right? That's information.
And sometimes for me, it was that.
Yeah, I know. Same. Yeah. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so then it's not about, oh, you're such a bad person for that. It's like, what does that tell you? How can you use that information going forward? And, you know, and so I think, in answer to your question, I think the important thing is really identify what are all the things that have to happen in your life and what's the one big goal that you're going to focus on, and then give yourself permission to let go of every other fantastic idea. Write it down somewhere, put it, you know, on sticky notes or in a journal or wherever you want it so that you don't lose it, but choose whatever the thing is and then do that really well. And, you know, we've talked about the Atomic Habits, James Clear. I'm a big fan of his work and really putting systems in place in service of whatever that goal is. And then put the goal aside, because it's not about the goal. It's not about the end state. It's about the process.
Okay. So then that actually makes a lot of sense. So because I was going to question, the next question I was going to have is like, how do you balance having one big goal and also like the end state thinking? Because they do kind of seem very similar.
Yep.
But I think it's very important that the next step in that process is, okay, take that goal and kind of let it be and then think about everything that you can do right now.
Yeah. Absolutely, because it might be something that you know you're not going to do for 10 years, mm-hmm. and yet it still is the one that you are very excited about, and it's the most aligned and you are excited about it and you can't stop thinking about it, then what can you do right now? And maybe 10 years isn't 10 years. Maybe it's really three. If you really put your focus there instead of being kind of all over the map. And it's especially, I mean, this is one of those older and wiser. So that's going to be the name of my book, is Older and Wisner.
That's good. I like that.
That way everyone will always know how to say my last name. And it really is true, because as I've gotten older, I have learned more and more about who I am as an individual. So I've become more and more aligned with myself. And this sort of wisdom that comes with that process is that all of those other ideas, as great as they are, that one that makes you just come alive, give it your attention, give it your time, give it all of the energy that you have, because it will become something so much bigger than you can imagine. And I just didn't understand that when I was 19 or 20 or shit, 30.
Yeah, yeah.
I just think, you know, that's the most important thing, is to just decide where, and it's not about deciding, it's about feeling where you're the most aligned, and then putting your energy into something that just, it drives you. You lose time doing it when it's fun, because you are creative, you are curious, you are just a natural learner. I mean, think about the things that you've done. We talked about this in class, right? Where anything that you've done that's not been in school that you've learned, the amount of time that you'll spend reading things on the internet and watching YouTube videos and asking people or just talking about it because you're interested,
yeah,
is phenomenal. And you just lose track of time doing it. And that's where you know what your one big is.
Yeah. Something you just said kind of reminded me of a TED Talk that I just listened to. And it was kind of about the decision-making brain is not the same as your like feeling brain. Mm. So like a lot of people could have a bunch of reasons to do something.
Yes.
And I almost think about that as like, you have a lot of reasons why you need this degree that you don't really care about, because it'll bring this, it'll bring that, whatever. But it just doesn't feel right. And I think a lot of times you have to respect the feeling like side of your brain. And I think that just gets stomped out a lot of the times.
The system tells us the rational, logical choices that we are supposed to be making.
Mm-hmm.
And so it feels like that's more important.
That makes sense. Yeah, especially.
So, yeah, I mean, I think finding that balance between what rationally do I know, what logically do I know, and what resonates with me and my feeling brain, my feeling body, really. I mean, because your emotions happen throughout your entire nervous system, and so how does your nervous system respond to this idea of whatever the thing is? Getting a degree, starting a business, you know. I mean, if you're not, like, your body doesn't feel lit up about something, then you do have to look inward and say, why not?
And that's where I've found, like, meditation has become just, like, a super useful tool, because I think a lot of times I'll try to think my way out of something or think my way into something.
Yeah.
And a lot of times that's just going to create like more mess. It's like, it's almost like you're trying to untangle your headphones, and by in doing that, you're just kind of tangling them more.
Yeah.
So I think something that I think would be super useful to like just teach in schools is meditation.
Yeah.
Kind of learning how to like listen to your thoughts and let them go. Cause I think that's super important. And that's kind of what I've been doing a lot in this class. And I've also had the freedom to do that in this class, because it's not like you have to follow this strict kind of course outline. And I think some people do think that's what it is.
Yeah.
And I think maybe as a recommendation for the future, kind of make that more clear, because I think I just picked up on that in a lot of what you said. Like, for example, how every week you have to do a, what do you call it? The objective, like, analysis or whatever.
Your self-assessment.
And one thing I picked up on is that you were like, it can just be however you want it to be, whatever you're assessing yourself on. And I've looked at other students and it's like, well, I got a 4 in the reading. Mm-hmm. I got a 3. And it's like, I think I just picked up on it a little bit more, and maybe you weren't even intending to to kind of have people pick up on it. But I kind of use this class. I just kind of use this class as my own, like I kind of made a little bit of a my own curriculum. And I think that I was lucky to view it that way and kind of have the freedom to do that.
That's actually a good way to frame it for students, to say it's sort of choose your adventure.
Choose your adventure, right?
Because you really, yes, of course, everybody chooses their curriculum. I've had students say, and I think you've said, you know, like I'm reading this book or that book or these things that are sort of, you know, feeding into what I'm learning about myself.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, I can recommend all the books in the world and I think they'll be useful. They were useful for me. And usually, especially if they're a New York Times bestseller, that suggests that they're probably useful
probably
to other
useful.
People.
Yeah.
But if you're really looking for alignment with what matters to you and where you are in that process, then absolutely. It's really develop your own curriculum as you go. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's an interesting way to frame it, because absolutely, that's what I wanted people to take away, was it isn't about telling us how you did so that we know how you're doing on the things, right?
Yeah.
It's really about learning how to objectively self-assess, to truly look back and say, how did I do in any area of my life this week? And in reality, when we talk about what kind of impact do you want to have, right? That's our impact statement that we've been working on all semester. What kind of impact do you want to have on the world around you? And lots of people will say a positive one. Okay, how? Right? How are you going to do that? And once you have a sense of what that looks like, you can ask yourself at the end of each day or week or month or year how you're doing. You're not reporting that out to anybody.
Mm-hmm.
But if that's really something that matters to you, then yeah, you want to reflect on that. And so I do think, yes, that your mindfulness would be so fueled by meditation. So I wonder if maybe we need to also offer an optional meditation.
Yeah.
Optional meditation time for Marketing 250. That would take business school to the next level.
That
right
would.
There. And this is my thing. Here's my thought about all of this is business has, let me see how I want to say this, because it's not really that we've taken humanity out of business. It's just never been there.
Yeah.
Right.
Since the Industrial Revolution.
Yeah. I mean, really. Yeah. Since the Industrial Revolution, it really is about how do we have the most effective, most efficient system, right? And so the humanity of business has never been the focus, rarely been the focus. Some companies do a really great job of focusing on their people and the human aspect of their businesses. But I think from a business school standpoint, from the lens of business school, where we bring you in and we teach you how to be business people, we have to do this work. It is our responsibility to help you understand who you are and what you value and the kind of impact that you want to have, so that when you go into the world, whether you work for someone else or you start your own company, you have a sense of who you are and you're aligning with something bigger than somebody else's standard. That's how we change the world. And that's how I think Broad students are going to change the world. And you said this earlier, and I wanted to jump in, but you were saying something really meaningful.
Okay.
But so often people disparage the younger generation and, oh, they're snowflakes or they're whatever negative things people say. And I disagree. I absolutely, and I know I said this at the beginning of the semester, but I want to say this for the podcast, is
okay.
This generation is perfectly poised to be the change makers of the future. You are all not only in a position where you have the power of the internet and social media and really truly world reach with any message that you want to put out there, but you also are really collectively not taking shit from anyone.
That's true. Yeah.
You're holding people accountable. And the best way to really know who to hold accountable and how to hold them accountable is to know what matters to you. And when you can lean on your own values and your set of guiding principles and what matters the most to you, then you can decide whether something is within or is not within those parameters. that's how we change the world.
Yeah, I was even thinking about that when you said like the business school thing where it's like it's our responsibility to kind of teach people, like ask them the questions, what is it that they value? Mm-hmm. And that kind of led me to thinking that the way that you that I kind of see a lot of business students is that they're, for better or for worse, are being trained to like go work for a corporation or go mm-hmm. work for a company. I mean, that's what a majority of the students who graduate with a business degree do.
Right.
But I think in teaching them what they value, they might be less likely to go somewhere where they don't find value, or they see like
the misalignment
or even like just bad practices.
Absolutely.
And that would force
yes.
corporations that do have bad practices to change, because then
yes.
once people actually are starting to like understand, then they won't go to them. And it's also like it getting in like a conspiracy. I feel like they don't want you to know. Like they don't want you
right.
to like know exactly what it is that you value.
Oh, or, yeah. absolutely. Bad actors out there, they want you to just be a cog in the system.
I know.
Yes, absolutely. And I know that the faculty at Broad and the administration at Broad want to help students understand a higher sense of purpose. I mean, it's a conversation that we've had in many meetings. I know our executive board members have talked about it in their meetings, that we want to help move this forward in a way that is meaningful for students. How do you do it? And this is, from my perspective, the most important thing that we can do is help people understand who they are at the core of their being and what matters to them and what kind of impact they want to have. And then you can do that exactly. As you're looking at job opportunities, as you're interviewing with companies, you will know. You will have a sense of whether or not it is aligned with what matters to you and whether or not this seems like a place that has ethical practices.
Yes.
And even if you are already in, being able to recognize that is going to be something that is easier to do, and making decisions that are maybe bold and risky are going to feel more important and more pressing because you know that it's out of alignment for you.
And also going with like the risk taking, because obviously, so this is a podcast about entrepreneurship.
Yeah.
And so I know a lot of Broad students, because now the Burgess Institute is part of Broad,
mm-hmm.
are doing the entrepreneurship minor.
Mm-hmm.
And I think something like this is very helpful for people who want to start their own businesses.
Absolutely.
And innovate, because they're
yes.
going to be more willing to take risks because they're going to want to follow what they value.
Yeah, absolutely. I would say I think it's important for everybody, but it's especially important for entrepreneurs, because there is a lot of time that you're doing all of that down and dirty day-to-day, you know, systems thinking. It's not just the end state. It's not just here I am with my successful business, right?
Yeah.
It's so much of all of the systems that you put into place to get there. And so you really do have to be super value aligned in doing those things, or else you're going to lose steam. It's just not going to be something that you're going to be able to put your heart and soul into. It will just become the slog of it over time. And it still can, surely.
Yeah.
But
it's not easy to be an entrepreneur.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
So
I will say this too. One of the things I'm talking with the college about right now is extending the offer to other non-Broad students to
yeah.
join this course. So opening up some sections that would be for other majors. So be on the lookout for that.
All right. So in kind of wrapping up, I basically have two questions. Like the one is, what do you kind of want to have happen for this class? Obviously expand it beyond, like, what do you see improvements you can make?
Yeah.
Based on like what happened this year.
Mm-hmm.
And then what was my second question? Oh, and then my second question was just like, what is like a very impactful piece of advice that you would just want to leave with?
Whew. Okay. The future of this class, I think, yes, most importantly, is expand it and offer it to more students, hopefully eventually the entire student body. And to improve the experience, I do think having maybe a few structured choices that students could make as far as different paths that they could take that feel more authentic to them might be one way to do it. I do think one of the really important aspects that I let go of during this process that I want to sort of reel back in is, how do we give really meaningful and consistent feedback across all of the sections? And not just to the students who are super engaged or not engaged at all, but really everyone. And so I have some ideas about ways that we can do that, where we can help students rather than saying, you got an A on a thing, you got a B on a thing. I mean, that's just not really meaningful. I mean, you can always be communicating more effectively. You can always be improving your communication skills. You can always be improving your self-discovery and your personal growth and your delivery of a presentation and your writing memos and all of those things, right? And so having really sort of this idea of what are the key factors that in business you're going to need to be able to do at a certain level. And we would call that, you know, our list of mastery topics. So you're going to need to be able to deliver a compelling presentation that's organized, that has, you know, the structure and organization that we talk about in class, and really mastering that. So then it wouldn't be like this presentation got an A and this presentation got a B, but it would be more that you are practicing those things over time, and they would move from items that are in practice to mastery. And then that list of mastery is what is your ticket out of this class, right? So that's probably my biggest idea that I have going forward, so that you'd be able to have a visual to say, ooh, I still have a lot of things I need to work on. And you know exactly what those are. In my mind, I know what they are because I've been teaching this for a really long time. But the student doesn't necessarily know. And I think, you know, in the absence of grades, constant feedback is really necessary.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
And if somebody's not seeking it, then what are we doing? Right. And so that's probably the area that I'll spend the most effort in structuring it for the future. So then that way it's really not, because, you know, like, it's really interesting to see what happens with even my instructional team. Like, how do we make them come to class? Well, we don't, right? I mean, if we're taking away extrinsic motivation, we're taking away all these external factors, you don't. All you can do is inspire them. And so how do you inspire people to learn?
Yeah.
That's the tough question,
yeah,
right? And that's what makes you an educator. That's education. That's helping people learn and grow. And so that's really the area that I'll spend a lot of time over the summer working on. In fact, we're already working on it. But, you know, really the time that I have over the summer to just swim around with my ideas.
Okay, yeah.
And then what advice would I leave everyone with? I have so many ways that I could end this, but here is... Yeah. Here is what I'm going to say.
Okay.
My advice is carve out meaningful time for self-discovery and personal growth for the rest of your life, because there will always be some sort of set of external factors that someone is telling you matter, whether it's grades right now or key performance indicators or your quota for your sales or your next goal of whatever you're doing with your business. There's always going to be some sort of external set of factors that you're hustling for. And it will always get in the way of prioritizing you and what matters to you. And I don't want people to wait until they're 40 to start doing that. So that's my advice.
I love it. All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on the Hatchcast.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. Of course.
Awesome.
Is there any way that people could, do you want to link like your website or your one, be on the lookout for One Big or anything?
Be on the lookout for One Big Coaching. Yeah. One Big Coaching. So the number one, BIG Coaching, One Bold Inspired Goal. And what I'll help people do is exactly this: discover who you are and what matters to you. And then zero in on what that one big is, and let's put systems in place to make it happen.
Hatchcast is an ongoing collaborative project.
This podcast was co-created by Aaron Richard
Tyler Mihai and Kurt Krieger,
and is produced by and under the supervision of
the Burgess Institute for Entrepreneurship and Innovation
at Michigan State University.
William Rowan,
Gabe Hales,
and Diego Fernandez are sound engineers and editors.
Our co-producers and co-hosts include
Gabe Hales,
Diego Fernandez,
Karina Stankowski,
Gabe Burke, Daniel Tice,
Charlotte Batchelor,
William Rowan,
and Aaron Richard.
Original sound is created by Katya Gaudina
and Karina Stankowski.
If you have any questions or comments, please feel free to reach out at hatchcast@msu.edu.
Thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening.